if you're creative already, ChatGPT is like a power suit. It's going to just make you stronger 10 times. But if you're not creative, if you don't know what you're doing, and then you're really lost in the forest of AI.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the Selling with Love podcast. I am so excited to have Ken Honda coming back on the show. We talked about how happy money is one of the ways that you can find yourself getting towards wealth. We talked about what are the current climates happening around the world when it comes to money, wealth, and abundance, and what we can do as we navigate an upcoming roller coaster ride, which you might be starting to feel. We're definitely going to get an update on where we stand on that journey, and the man being a best-selling author around the world with over 8 million copies sold of his books, has released a brand new book that just came out called True Wealth, 9 Lessons from a Grandfather on Happiness and Abundance. We're going to dig a little deeper on what are some of these lessons we can apply in our life as well. And of course, always having a great conversation with Ken on the show. Ken, welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Jason, for inviting me back. That means I didn't really mess up last time.
Oh, you didn't mess up. You do fantastically. And honestly, I love reading all the comments, particularly on the YouTube channel when people come and listen to your content. It's very refreshing. It's very actionable. And it allows you to understand if you're doing the things that feel right and realize, hey, those are often the right things. Now, that being said, I kind of opened with talking about this roller coaster ride, and it is a callback to a previous conversation that I want to set the frame for. But on the last episode, we knew that okay, the world is going through some mega transformations. It might have a little bit of rockiness as we transition to a different type of economy. Lots of technology creating pressure. The economies, they seem to be pressure. And you made this comparison to being in a roller coaster ride, which is like, it feels a little scary, but overall we end up at the end of the ride and everything is fine. So the question I wanted to kick off with is, where are we right now on the roller coaster? Are we still like climbing up slowly? Are we in the middle of going down and screaming? How do we feel we are on that journey?
So in terms of New York Dow Jones Industrial, we just hit the record high 40,000. So like we're going this way and then see, are we going up or are we going down? So that's where we are. And personally speaking, if you are in like, say, certain industry, like restaurant business, the cost of food, gas, electricity are rising up. So if you're in an industry like that, which it's harder to just put prices up, and then you are in sort of like going down. And also some industries like AI industry is shooting up. So, and also if you're above AI, AI is a fantastic tool. You know, I have my AI and I don't need 3 assistants. You know, I need AI to write my books. Roughly, and then I can edit and then improve it. But if you're below AI, you know, you're getting paid like 10% of what you used to get. So I think a lot of people are experiencing a big change as we speak. So whatever that change is, you can embrace it and also you can integrate it and then you can start a new life. You have no choice.
I mean, we're feeling the ripples of the AI industry for sure. I think that's the biggest one that people are like, wow, it's not coming, it's here. And I love the terms that you're talking about being above AI or under AI. And I'd be curious to know, what is your advice for people who are hearing this message and they're like, I don't know how to get myself to a place where I'm above AI?
Yeah, it's easy because if you're an illustrator, you know, or painter, are you good? Are you better than AI? And then your paintings and illustrations are getting sold at a higher price than before. And if you're under AI, and then your artwork is not getting sold because, you know, people can do it for free or they can create their own. And then your value goes down. So it's very simple.
And so I can see this example in the case of arts, but say that I'm somebody working in, you know, a traditional administrative jobs. Are there certain types of tools we should be embracing or activities that we should do to get more familiar with using AI?
So for example, if you are asked by your boss to do a research or marketing on certain product or certain thing. And then your boss can ask, you know, ChatGPT, and then boom, you know, in 2 minutes, it will be like a 30-page report. And then if you ask you, probably it's going to take like a week. So he has a choice or she has a choice of asking ChatGPT and you, like, can you, you know, create a better report than AI? That is really the issue.
Yeah, Ken, I find myself using AI in such a constructive way. And I think you'll appreciate one of the habits I do have with AI is I always stay very polite and kind and grateful to AI because I want it to treat me like a pet, not hurt me once it takes over, because it feels like it's taking over absolutely everything. But it's been a tool that's just been a great assistance to me. I'm encouraging it in all the departments for my business, and I'm seeing that being embraced by companies and how much more can be done with the same resources. And so even in the way that you mentioned writing a book, and there's a lot of people who are maybe on the fence about writing a book, now they can see that so much can be created with the assistance of AI. And so how do you see that shaping even the publishing industry, given that we have tools like this available now?
You know, an interesting thing is an editor of mine knows that I'm very busy. So she just asked ChatGPT, can you create a book like Ken Honda? And she came up with a 200-page book already. And she said, half jokingly, Ken, are you okay? Can I publish this book under your name? And then, you know, it's amazing. The quality is pretty good. Of course, I have to rewrite the whole thing. But I think the work I need to do is like 20% or 10% of what I used to do. Somebody like me, I can get the huge benefit because somebody is working for me, you know, for free almost. So I think if you're creative already, ChatGPT is like a power suit. It's going to just make you stronger 10 times. But if you're not creative, if you don't know what you're doing, and then you're really lost in the forest of AI. So I think we are all like left in a very cold, wild forest of AI, that there's no food and there's no water in the forest. So we have to make means to find food and water in the forest before the government comes in and support. I think we're going to have some kind of universal system once enough people will be out of job and then create chaos in the world, which is, as we speak, it's happening right now in Europe. And I've been just going around the world. I just got back and I've seen many cities in Europe and America, lots of homeless issues. And I feel so sad that a lot of people are thrown out of their homes that they rented. The rent is too expensive. There's a rent hikes everywhere in the world. That's so disgusting.
Yeah. Oh, so we are feeling that pressure. And of course, you kicked off with saying some of these industries that are closer to the supply chains, like the restaurants, are already seeing how they have to raise the price. I was actually looking at a report that was showing an ad from the 1990s from McDonald's and how they had a bunch of meals that were on the dollar menu. And it was just $1 to get a cheeseburger. And now it's a lot more expensive, particularly I'm looking here in US dollar terms, but I believe it's like $5, if not more, to get a cheeseburger at McDonald's now. So you're already seeing even the fast food restaurants are becoming out of access for pricing. So that's kind of the downside on the roller coaster. And we talk about how AI is going to be one of the things that you can do as an action right now. If you find yourself being above, you'll be able to leverage the tool and generate some value with it. And you've highlighted creativity. Like if you have this creative power being a true advantage here, how important is creativity in this shifting economy?
Since general brands have no higher value, so the general brand, it gets the lower the prices. So if it's just a regular cup of coffee, maybe you can get $2. But if it's a high quality, nice selected coffee, people don't mind paying $10. So the same thing goes with art. If it's just a painting, you know, AI can print it out, it could be like $5. But if it's a very nicely done painting, it could be $5 million. So the value added is what it counts. So if you're doing a coaching, if your coaching is a regular service, like a mediocre general service, and then you're getting paid the lowest minimum. But if you are coaching as one and only that a lot of people want, and then you can charge as much as you want. I think it goes with anything, you know, cars or clothes or glasses or whatever the services you're in. The more high value that you can create on top of this general thing, a higher pay you receive. So the creativity is what counts from now.
Yeah. I'll bring up an example for me because I had a friend who came to me and wanted to get into sales. And they said, oh, you know, I've heard that there's two types of people in sales. There's setters and closers. Setters are people that book the appointments for the closers. The closers are the ones that actually have conversations with people and get them to make a transaction. And he said, oh, some people told me being a setter is actually a better and easier way to get into it. And what I told him is a setter is just a temporary role until the efficiency of the system allows people to book their own appointments. And I think with AI, that's already going to start happening. And that's when I hear you speak, that's an example of where if you're not in the higher value part of the equation, where you have the unique thing that will be harder to replace with AI, you can actually still justify a lot of your value.
Yes. And also like something manual, like a massage. If you're good with massage, and then AI is not yet taking over that quality of massage. So I think whatever you do, just do more than AI. Do more so computers or AIs can't replace you.
Well, it's interesting you bring the massage example because there's plenty of massage chairs, right? But everybody knows that there's something different from going into a massage chair versus doing something with another human that actually gives a massage. So it feels like every industry has the massage chair that's coming, but there's a uniqueness of the human that still needs to exist in every industry. And I guess we need to find that essence based on where we're at or what industry we're working in.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor. And also, you have to find your own niche. I always say there is a reserved seat somewhere in your train, and then you have to find out where your seat is. Because a lot of us are sitting in the wrong seat. And when somebody comes over and then says, sorry, you're taking my seat, and then you're getting fired from a current job. So, you know, all you have to do is get up and start looking for your own seat. And once you see your own place, you know that's your place. So when you're feeling uneasy about where you are, or just when you feel like something doesn't click where you are, you really have to stand up and start looking.
I want to go into one of the concepts from your new book, True Wealth, which, by the way, we're going to recommend for people to look into the show notes. We'll have a link to Ken's new book about true wealth, the 9 lessons from a grandfather on happiness and abundance. And I want to pull up the first letter that you speak about, synchronicity, and everything we've been talking about, which is the economy shifting very rapidly, the AI that's on the rise, how we need to start looking at ourselves and finding different seats. It seems like synchronicity would be something that could assist you a lot when it comes to being able to pay attention to what it is and what it is not. So I'd love for you to share us a bit more about the first letter from the book to give us a bit of a taste of where does synchronicity play a role in helping us find true wealth.
Great. Thank you for asking. So before I go into all the details, let me just tell you briefly about my book. So it's a novel that I wrote 4 years ago in Japanese, and now it got translated into English. So it's about 9 letters that grandfather left for his grandson. So this guy is a multimillionaire, but he donated all the money to charity. So instead, he left 9 letters. So this boy, 20-year-old boy, receives a package from his grandfather's lawyer, and there are 9 letters in the package. And each letter has a title. The first letter is synchronicity, the second decision, intuition, and action, and they follow. So each letter he opens, something happens. So it's like a dramatic novel. And then this boy learns about his father, grandfather, and all the important lessons that he didn't get to learn from his grandfather while he was alive. So Jason is talking about the first letter he opened, and the first letter is synchronicity. So synchronicity is a very interesting, fascinating subject for me because we don't notice them as much. But when you focus on synchronicities, there are so many synchronicities, coincidences in our very daily life. You know, you just bump into your friend, and then I'm going to Bali next month, and then we happen to probably stay in the right time. You know, something like that happens. And without your knowledge, if you don't say that you are coming to somewhere next week or next month, there's no way of knowing certain things. So if you are more aware of what's going on in your life, you can connect dots in your life. So synchronicities are those dots that connect your life in a meaningful way.
If I understand this correctly, when we want to see synchronicity work best in our favor, is the fact that when we have our life unfolding and we're able to kind of put it out there more about what those plans are, there's going to be more opportunities to have something come back and reflect back on your declaration so that these synchronicities can happen. So me and Ken were talking before we recorded that he's actually coming to Bali, and the synchronicity is I'm also based in Bali, so we're probably going to organize a chance for us to meet. But if you hadn't declared that this is the intention, that's what's happening, we would have never been able to find that opportunity to sync. So is that the key lesson here, is to find a way to be able to more proactively share the things that we're doing or have a better plan and make sure other people are aware of that plan?
Yeah, so like a small chat always works. And also when I'm in a cafe, I always try to look, you know, just around once, and then I usually find a friend or two, you know, and then we just start this conversation. Or just a lot of people spot me these days because of my YouTube and other things. I was just spotted in Helsinki or Paris, or of course a lot in Tokyo, but they just start to find me. As long as I'm not with somebody in a meeting, I'm just open to having a fun conversation. And I have received so much valuable information through chatting with strangers that I bump into them like that. So I really appreciate these synchronicities, and we should pay more attention to what's going on in our life.
I find this very interesting because there seems to be a lot of healthy synchronous actions that happen. So for example, you have your YouTube, you have your books, so people can recognize who you are, and then they come to you with the right message, the right intention. If I can think of my own life, you know, there was somebody who reached out to me on LinkedIn. They became one of my best clients. They invited me to India, they invited me to Miami, and I did workshops for their team. But the series of synchronicity for that to happen was somebody listened to an interview on YouTube, ends up buying the book, tells one of his team members, they reach out to me. So there's a whole sequence of events that happened that led to a client that I could not have planned myself, but just being out there created the positive synchronicity. So I wanted to talk about, how do you distinguish between actions to seek good synchronicity versus things that you might use synchronicity as an excuse? And what I mean by that is I could say, oh, you know what? I go to the clubs and party every night so that there might be a synchronicity for me to find a good business partner. Like, there must be some rules here.
Right. You know, synchronicities are those that almost like the law of vibration. So just say if you want to meet a sincere partner, like going to nightclubs every day, it may not be a good solution. So if you're introduced by your friends who are very nice and sincere and honest, and then you might be able to find a better partner. So if you want to just experience interesting synchronicities, say if you are interested in just having more business connections, you should hang around with business people. And if you want to have connections with art people, you should hang around with art people. That's why I think choosing your tribe carefully is a good advice.
I've been trying to convince some of my friends that are looking for romantic relationships to come to run clubs in the morning, because you find people that have good discipline, good habits, and well, I'll wait for the day that they do show up, because I do find that where you find your tribe, you'll find some of the values that you're looking for to resonate with. Is this very similar to the law of attraction?
Yes, exactly, because whatever we focus on, we get. If you're just focusing on the wrong place, then you'll get the wrong thing. Like the reason why people who try to get the quick cash usually lose fast is that the quick money comes in and quick money leaves very fast. So if you just try to go for slow money comes in slowly, but they stay in your system and they leave slowly. So it's the same thing. So you have to, if you want to have a nice, long-lasting relationship, and then you should be surrounded by those who that you can trust on.
Yeah, I love this input that's coming in. You get to reflect on. What I would want to comment about, though, is right now there seems to be an overarching message that would be around fear, worry. And that's always happening. I mean, the news always has something to worry about. But economically speaking about wealth, like we've talked about rising prices, we're hearing about inflation, high interest rates, we're seeing indicators in data that is maybe skewing towards the negative. Are we saying that we should be trying to avoid these uncomfortable topics, or are there ways you can lean towards it that still brings positive outcomes?
I think facing those negative emotions is very important, because negative emotions would be just a great kickstart, kick you in the butt, and then, okay, I have to seriously start thinking about how I operate in my business. So I think fear can be a nice motivator for you if you treat it nicely. You can always embrace negative emotions as well in order to have a beautiful life.
I think of the times that I've been in the best shape of my life usually was actually associated with a negative emotion of self-disappointment that got me to actually make some big changes to get to a place where I was like, wow, look at the transformation. And I think that can be applied in every area of life. So definitely not avoiding some of that negativity. If you are comfortable with this, I'd love to open up a different letter that comes from your book to continue down this path. And again, for those who are interested in going through the whole process, we'll have a link in the show notes for you to pick up a copy of True Wealth. And I find this one is a particularly interesting letter because, again, let's say I'm listening to podcasts, I'm looking at YouTube for instructional content, I'm developing myself, I'm growing. There's people that are telling me, you got to go into crypto. That'll be the best thing to do right now. There's others saying, you got to jump into the stock market. There's some saying, you got to start your own business, or no, you got to develop your skills in a business. There's so many choices to make, and there's so much information that's coming at us, telling us what we should or shouldn't do. Oftentimes, very conflicting type of advice, and it's very hard to make decisions. And it seems like a lot of us might be stuck in indecisiveness because we're trying to just grab onto another piece of information that's going to tell us this is the right way to do it. And I'd love to expand on what are your philosophies around decision and how to navigate.
The right decisions have to come from your right intuition. So check if you're just feeling greedy or just feeling too fearful. When decisions are made out of fear or out of greed, usually they will just guide you to a place that's not so fun. So if you make a decision out of greed, I think you just want, for example, when you feel like I have to make this decision to make money, then that usually leads to a loss, you know. So I think when it comes to money, you can build on a strong foundation. And so if you're trying to go for easy, quick money out of greed, you are likely to lose, because it's like playing games with a devil. They let you in the second time or three times or four times. But if you just lose after 11th win, you lose everything. And then that's how a lot of gamblers lose all their money. So a lot of people are going into easy money. They just leverage their business until they lose everything. So just see in the next couple of years, Warren Buffett says, when the water is pulled out from the swimming pool, you know who's not wearing a swimsuit. So that's what's going to happen.
The emperor's clothes shall fall. And so I feel like what you've just shared here brings in a lot of emotional awareness. And I'd love for you to speak on that. What role does that emotional awareness, because you spoke about, okay, am I coming from greed? Am I coming from fear? It sounds like this is work that needs to be done to have a better barometer to help you make those decisions. Are there tools you suggest to nurture that?
Yeah. So I always check myself. Am I doing this for me? Am I doing this for other people? So I always check the arrow. Is it going for me or going for other people? So if I'm just doing for other people, I do better. And if I'm trying to do it for me, usually not good. You know, so that doesn't mean that I work for somebody for nothing and then I don't get paid. So that's not what I'm saying. But my intention is, am I working for other people? And if I just make some people smile, as a result, the happy money comes in. But if I'm trying to do something just only for me, usually that thing doesn't just stick for a long time. So I try to make sure which way the arrow goes.
As you say that, I'm thinking of one of my primary clients. And I remember the intention that I came in was just really, really wanting to help them. And helping them, even in the sense that I had that as an initial prime, I was like, oh my God, I just want to get in there and help them. But they weren't my client yet. And that fuel of wanting to help them is what made me tell them, I need you to pay me thousands of dollars so I can come inside your business and have a look. And it was almost like the most powerful closing technique I've ever used, was because I cared so much, I needed to take their money. And I say that deliberately because a lot of us have that fear of like, oh my God, taking money, I don't feel too comfortable. But when I was so anchored with the fact that I know if I just go in there and have a look and start seeing at what's going on, I felt like I had this calling to make sure a transaction happened. And I took the money and I had policies in place to offer, you know, a guarantee of deliverability. Even like I was very comfortable saying like, if this doesn't transform things, you'll get your money back. And I was comfortable making those statements because I just wanted to get in there and help. And there was like this reciprocity or vibration to that energy that just made them go, ah, okay, here's the money, please come in. And I was able to do such great work there. And I find what you're saying right now is like a reinforcement of investigating all the times that I've had great success has come from that arrow pointing out. And the reason I share this story is to reinforce the point that it doesn't mean working for free, is just coming in with that objective that it's, I'm going to help someone else. So I need to aggressively collect the money because that's what opens the doors. And I'm hoping that this is a habit, especially for those who struggle in sales, can actually get that check in and understand that if you just switch that arrow, it makes everything else flow much easier. Ken, I love how you blend so much of these practices that are more anchored on the spiritual side that actually lead towards having results in the tangible, like the financial reward. We've talked about this even on the previous conversations where some of the key relationships we should nurture are what are going to create a lot of your wealth. It's not the tangible assets, it's intangible assets. And I find that now more than ever, it seems to be reinforcing that that's what we need to invest on. Would you have some additional information for anybody who's trying to find themselves outside the woods on what they can do to foster better relationships that can support them in the transition?
So whatever you do, there's always something that you can do for other people by using your gifts. If you're good at listening, you can be a nice counselor. And if you're good at talking, you can be a coach. Oh, by the way, there are two kinds of salespeople. One, listener. The other, speaker. You can become a top sales either by listening or either by speaking. So whatever the gift you have, you can both be very successful. So figuring out what you're good at, if you're good at cooking, you should cook more. If you're good at writing, you should do that more. So focus on your gifts and focus on your strength. And then if you can help somebody with your gifts, they appreciate you. And maybe at the beginning, they just only say, oh, thank you. Thank you, Ken. You did a great job. And then you get nothing. But sometimes they take you out for lunch and dinner, and then they start paying you. You have to just go through the time that you're not getting paid. But if you are more, if you give more, then they just feel like, okay, maybe not dinner is not enough. They start paying you. So maybe first few years could be tough. But after you're better at what you do, and then they start paying you. I used to be a speaker and in my 20s, and people loved my speech, you know, my presentations. But they didn't pay me. They just thanked me. And then after a couple of years, they said, oh, your speech is so good. This, I have to do something. Can I pay you? And then they started paying me. So you have to pour more unless it overflows. So if you're not getting paid, don't complain about it. Instead, you should be thinking, what can I do more to convince them that they want to pay you?
You mentioned something right there that I hadn't heard before, but you at first it seems like the thanks were coming before the money. Would measuring the thanks you get from the activities you do a good indicator that you're on your way to getting actual financial transactions from your activities?
Yeah, so I always tell my clients, collect your thank you in your life. Just say small thank you, middle thank you, big thank you. And so if you have enough in a jar, then you're getting paid. But unless somebody appreciates you so much, you don't get paid. So the reason why I'm successful in books and others is that I have helped so many people in such a depth that they feel like I saved their life. You know, I just a few words, nothing for me. But for them, it means a lot. They feel like I saved their lives, or at least they changed their lives in such a deep way. For me, it's a piece of cake. I do it every day for almost 25 years. And then for them, it's a big thing. They remember for the rest of their life. So that's why they buy my books, or they come to my seminars, or whatever the thing that they wanted to do. But the energy going out will come back. So the more impact you do for other people, you receive more. So, but the funny, interesting thing is, like in my time, 85% of my time, I don't get paid. You know, I do interviews, I do pro bono, I do a lot of things for free. I don't really care if I get paid from the person in front of me or not. As a result, I just give massive amount of love, hope, and I help people transform their relationship with the money. And so as a result, I get paid so handsomely. So don't get attached to who pays you, because you'll be paid according to the quality and the quantity that you serve for other people.
Ken, I find this is one of the most fun spiritual ways of measuring brand equity, is how much thanks you have in your jar is really what kind of becomes that source of being able to have goodwill and to monetize in the future as well. And I think that's a very, very important thing for people to focus on, especially if you want to find yourself in the place where you're above AI, as we spoke about at the beginning.
Yeah, so it's interesting. One psychic person said, in my aura, there are lots of thank you in many different languages. And I really love the idea, you know, that a lot of, because I talk about arigato your money, appreciate your money in your life. And I'm sure, you know, it's in 34 languages now, by now. So it makes sense that I have a lot of thank you in my auras. And I really love that idea. So if you just keep just sharing who you are, sharing your gifts, your life will be full of thank you.
Ken, I will send you one extra thank you into your aura from myself and the listeners of Selling with Love. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you come back on the show and share so generously with us. What I'd love to do is just for everybody listening in, some of the key takeaways I've had from this conversation. Number one is just understanding, yeah, we're getting towards that top, maybe starting going down on that roller coaster, but have no fear. There's a lot of things that we can do to find ourselves out of the forest and back into a good space as we're having this transition happening in our economy. We've talked about how being above AI is going to be a key thing we can focus on. What are the things that we do that aren't replaced by AI at this time? Thinking about the massage chair and how you can still be a masseuse in that industry. What is that creativity that you need to work on? What is that key part of the skill set that you can use AI to make yourself more effective, but there's still that key skill in your particular field that you can still do? Oftentimes, you'll notice it's going to be based on human-to-human connection. We talked also about how synchronicities are a powerful thing to assist you on that journey, and the more that you have your plans being put out there and the actions that you take and the places that you go, bring the kinds of synchronicities that you want coming back into your life might start taking you towards a path of getting out of the forest and being much more aligned in the process. Maybe a little less clubbing, maybe a little more going into business environments or creative environments that start nurturing the things you want in your life. Very, very much like the law of attraction for those who are a fan. We've talked about how you want to make sure you're having great relationships with people. Of course, that was a big focus of our last conversation, but every single person you interact with, you're going to be creating value. If thanks comes before the money, collecting thanks might be the best indicator that you're on the right path to your gift. So if you're cooking and you're receiving gratitude, do more of that and see if it actually starts filling up that jar to a point that it could become something monetizable in the future. And then if you're feeling overwhelmed with making those decisions, getting in touch with our emotions, checking in and seeing, are we doing this from a good or a bad place? Greed, fear, might create the short term, but the long term results is what we're looking for. And you'll see that those are aligned with much higher vibration emotions in the process. There is so much more for you to unpack from this new book, True Wealth, The 9 Lessons from a Grandfather on Happiness and Abundance. Once again, show notes will have a link for you to grab yourself a copy. You'll be able to go through this story and read the 9 letters to see how this can guide you towards building the wealth, even as we transition in the current times. Ken, it's been an absolute pleasure having you come back on the show. Always fun. Thank you so much. Any closing thoughts? I usually ask, what does selling with love mean to you? But we've had that answered before. So I'd just love to know, what are the exciting things you're looking forward to in the future?
So I think I always say money is there to be enjoyed. So let's enjoy money. Let's appreciate money. And let's embrace fear. You know, we're going to experience lots of fear. But let's melt fear with love is, I think, what selling with love is all about. So thank you, Jason, for being such a kind, and generous leader who just sparks love and inspiration in all the people that you touch.
I do my best. I appreciate the thanks. I'll take it as an indication that I'm also on the right path, but I really appreciate every moment we spend together, Ken.
Yes, you're incredible. Please keep on shining, people.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.